Mr. Barbayon, thank you so much for that inspiring, wonderful talk. I think it summarizes, especially the trailer that you showed us, and summarizes in such an inspiring and beautiful way many of the values and goals that we hold dear as well in documenting cultures and languages around the world. So we're on to the closing ceremony. It's difficult to believe. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Lyle Campbell. Now, Lyle probably needs no introduction to this audience. He's a top expert on the languages of Mesoamerica and the Uralic languages, and on historical linguistics in general. Before coming to UHM, Dr. Campbell held appointments at the University of Missouri, the State University of New York at Albany, Louisiana State University, the University of Canterbury at New Zealand, and the University of Utah. And he's been a visiting professor at universities in 8 other countries. He's been twice awarded the Leonard Bloomfield Book Award by the Linguistic Society of America for the best book in linguistics published in the previous 2 years. Now, with such an enormous and distinguished resume, you would think, you wouldn't expect to see Lyle walking around in t-shirts in the department. And I have to share with you something that he said when we asked him if he'd make a few closing remarks, and I hope you won't mind if I share this. He said, "Wow, I'm very humbled and honored to do this. I don't think I've ever closed a conference before, at least not intentionally." So, Lyle.
Embarrassed when they get these introductions. I wonder who they're talking about. So sharing worlds of knowledge, I think the first thing is just to ask us all to give a thunderous thanks to the organizing committee, to Jim Yoshioka, to the student volunteers, and to thanking all of you too for coming and participating. Take away from this conference? What should we take away from this conference? I think we'll all agree that we'll probably take away some motivation and some inspiration, some excitement, new knowledge, and new ways of sharing worlds of knowledge. I want to do some stock taking to help us think about what we might take away. It occurs to me that it was 22 years ago when our friend and colleague Mike Krauss made the call to arms, the world's languages in crisis, and it caught the attention of linguists around the world. 22 years ago seems like a long time. To me, it seems like we're still getting started. It seems like we're still building momentum. So what can we say about what's happened in these 22 years? Well, on the positive side, the good news side, we can point to funding agencies, though limited, major conferences like this one, journals such as the Language Documentation Conservation Journal, various websites, the amount of enrichment that's been done to the empirical base of linguistics, linguistic theory, and the contributions that have been made from the documentation of these languages, the increase in the number of scholars and students, the numerous languages that have been investigated because of the concern, and the community-based revitalization and conservation projects and programs. So lots of good things have happened in the 22 years, but it's still very distressing when we think of the bad news side of this. There are very few funding sources. Some have ceased, some are receding, and probably all are threatened in some way, and none has very much money. There are extremely few dissertations that are actually on language documentation projects. There's still far, far, far too many critically endangered languages that get no attention at all. So as we go from the conference, what will we take with us? What can we do to move things from the more bad news negative side to the more positive side. Well, I don't think it's mission impossible. So your mission, should you decide to accept it, is to go forth from the conference and become the needed heralds, become the needed spokespersons to promote the cause of endangered languages. The message of the language of the world's languages in crisis and how to defend them needs to be made known to everybody in the entire world. We need a greater impact, and we need to influence public and policymakers and politicians and educators, and especially fund people who can provide funds and fundraisers. We need to try to renew our efforts to get the message across. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but we need to sing our song loudly if we're the choir. We need to declare the plight of endangered languages and the consequences of the loss of linguistic diversity and the devastation that that wreaks on members of endangered language communities, so that it becomes widely known and more resources are available. So as we leave the conference, we can ask, what can we, a small group of some 400-odd participants in the third ICLDC, accomplish? What can we achieve? We can certainly contribute to raising awareness and mobilizing support, and we really need to do that, particularly as funding sources are threatened and diminishing and drying up. So I try to imagine how we put this in some perspective. And I did some thinking that I won't tell you about, but I was imagining if we just had the salary of one football coach for a year, and I won't tell you how many, you can figure it out, but just think of how many graduate student assistantships you could have to train people for the work, or how many language revitalization projects you could support with that amount of money. Or think of the cost of one Apache helicopter that goes down because of human error, $61 million. Think of how many Dell-sized revitalization projects you could fund for that. Or think of the cost of waging war in Afghanistan for one day, $300 million. We could address probably Dell-sized research grants. We could address 1,000 endangered languages. Well, I don't mean to say anything about whether I'm for or against these kinds of expenditures. You might guess. But to put it all in perspective, these are small things. This is not a lot of money we're talking about. If we as a group could simply get the attention of enough people to either contribute some big funds from some big people or lots of little funds from lots of people, we'll be able to do a lot better job. So I hope you'll accept the mission to try to increase awareness so that the support for our cause will be better. Now, that's not the only thing we have to do as we leave. I think we all have to go out and...
Our apologies.
Well, there's more than promotion. We need to actually be in league with language groups and community members to facilitate in any way we're able to programs of language maintenance and revitalization. And we need ourselves to go out and document languages and to support our students and talk to our neighbors to get the job done. So let's go forth from the conference and share worlds of knowledge so that we can come back in 2 years' time to the fourth ICLDC and report on all of our positive achievements. And so with that in mind, please put down in your calendars February 2015 when we want to invite you back and welcome you back here again. Thanks for your participation. No, I'm not leaving, unfortunately. I have an honor. I get to introduce a colleague of mine, Professor William O'Grady. You may have heard about the Hawaiian Sign Language. He's going to tell us about that, and I want to introduce him. I probably don't. don't need to. He's really famous. Everybody knows him. But let me say a couple of words about him. William O'Grady is in the Department of Linguistics here at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. And he's the author of a number of books, many articles. His research areas are syntactic theory, language acquisition, and Korean. And to us, it's truly exciting that we can collaborate with him in bringing language acquisition studies together with language revitalization in really exciting ways. He's developed really exciting things for assessing proficiency in endangered language communities. His current work in syntactic theory focuses on emergentism, a book called Syntactic Carpentry. I'm not going to tell you all about all of his books because there are too many. They're very exciting. He's published on everything from syntactic theory to a book on the sounds of Korean, a pronunciation guide. Please welcome Dr. O'Grady.
I know that you've all been far too busy at this conference to do anything like watch the TV news or read a newspaper. But if you had, you would have seen a report of a previously undiscovered language having been found here in Hawaii. In fact, we had a talk on it here this morning. For those of you who couldn't go to the talk, let me play a short video that was produced by the University of Hawaii, because this event is very timely and very relevant to the work of this conference.
If you know the history and culture of Hawaii, you know that there was a time not long ago that the Hawaiian language was on the brink of extinction.
What you didn't know until very recently is that Hawaii is the home to a second highly endangered language that is found nowhere else.
Opening a March 2013 press conference announcing that a research team from the University of Hawaii at Manoa Linguistics Department identified a previously undocumented indigenous sign language called Hawaii Sign Language, or HSL. The woman on the left is using American Sign Language, or ASL. The woman on the right, Linda Lambrecht, is using HSL, which she learned as a child.
Our information on Hawaii Sign Language goes back to the 1800s, long before the influence of American Sign Language.
Lambrecht, an ASL instructor at the Kealani Community College, was the inspiration behind the research project.
Dog.
She says HSL started to fade in the 1940s as ASL became the dominant sign language.
Pig.
Researchers were able to confirm that HSL was its own unique language after interviewing and recording 19 elderly deaf people and two of their adult children who used HSL. The research project ensures its preservation. Here's Lambrecht speaking through an interpreter.
In the 1980s, I always felt very inspired about Hawaii Sign Language, and I personally would write about it and kept my own notes about it. And now that it's known, I'm delighted.
This is the first time since the 1930s that a previously unknown language, either spoken or signed, has been documented in the United States.
Now we have a really short video that directly contrasts Hawaii Sign Language and American Sign Language for you. Let me show you that next time.
Father.
If you know the history and culture of Hawaii, you know that there was a time not long ago that the Hawaiian language was on the brink of extinction.
What
we
didn't know until very recently is that Hawaii is
black. White.
Monkey, getting.
Dog. Pig. Pellet line. Count. My father has three black dogs. My mother won't eat pork.
Now, folks, Hawaii Sign Language may well turn out to be the last of America's undiscovered languages, and I want you to know how close we came to missing it. It would almost certainly have been lost forever if it hadn't been for Linda Lambrecht, who carried it in her mind and in her heart for decades, waiting and hoping for a chance to have it recognized for what it is, a language. And finally, she found a person who could help her, her former student, Barbara Earth. Together, they showed immense perseverance and determination, overcoming obstacle after obstacle as they gathered funding bit by bit. I'm talking $10 here, $50 there, that would allow them to seek out the few surviving speakers of Hawaii Sign Language on four different islands. They interviewed them, they videotaped them, and then with the help of James Woodward, who's a leading specialist on sign languages of Asia and the Pacific, who arrived here just in time, they analyzed what they recorded, and they found just what Linda said they would find, a language. Now, Linda and Barbara, would you stand up, please? I'd like you to recognize their extraordinary effort and courage. An inspiration to us all. Thank you.
To just show the synergy and the serendipity that happens at this conference, we were able to do this extraordinary technological feat of bringing two signing communities together. We video streamed one talk, and it was immediate follow-on on Linda and Barbara's talk, and we just like to show a short clip of that from this morning. So here's the final talk, just after Lynn and Barbara's talk, and you'll see that there's interpretation. Do we have the sound? There's talk and there's interpretation.
Mm-hmm. And well, I think forever, like we're in Hawaii, for example, and we want deaf people to be teaching, teaching deaf.
So she's interacting with somebody in Uganda. And you can see all the interpretation going on, and the person in Belgium and Uganda. We're so happy that this confluence of events has just put these people in contact. So. Okay.
By using two cameras on the audience, we were able to field questions in sign language and have multiple translators going between international and American Sign Language.
So it's really great.
Okay, we're ready to say some thank yous. Lots of thank yous. Okay. I think the first person that we'd actually like to take the time to thank is someone that all of you probably collectively have the most intimate relationship with via email, which is Jim Yoshioka, who is our conference coordinator.
Thank you.
the amount of work that Jim has put into this conference. He's basically been working on it for 2 years, probably starting a day after the end of the last conference, something like that. He's been the main person in charge of communicating with all of you, with coordinating with the Yunnan Center, with handling everything that's financial, with handling all of the gathering of all the abstracts and emailing all of the abstract reviewers and contacting all of you and taking care of visas and taking care of bookings in the hotel, and has been nonstop working for the last 4 days, basically 20 hours a day probably. And so, okay, close. So thank you so very much, Jim. Actually, to take this moment to make a more personal thank you. This isn't necessarily on behalf of the entire committee, but it is on behalf of me. I would like to thank someone who's been really instrumental, I think, in getting this conference off the ground, and who has been the one who's been there to offer nonstop support and to tell us all to kind of take a deep breath and step back. And she's also been key in securing a lot of the on-campus funding and communicating with the upper administration about what we've been doing here at the ICLDC. And she's also been very essential in communicating with the interpreters and making everything go so successfully in order to welcome this new audience to our conference. And so I just really want to take a moment to thank Victoria for everything that you've done in the last 2 years to really to help us out.
Can I just interrupt Andrea then?
Okay. She didn't know I was going to do that.
And you didn't know I was going to do this, because Andrea, I think we're moving onward and upward, and you've just been, like Jim, you've just been at the center of things and running the course, and you know, with all of the student involvement and just being at the center of things.
Other people that need to be thanked as well. I want to actually recognize the members of the Student Steering Committee. So when you hear your name, if you could please stand up, and then we'll save our applause to the end, and we'll congratulate you then. First of all, we have Aaron Stanek, if you're here. Stand up. Tobias Bloy, Katie Butler, Becky Clifford, Jay Hatfield, David Iannucci, Stephanie Locke, Chris Mann, Colleen O'Brien, Emerson O'Dagher, Mayumi Oiwa, Eve Okura, and I just want to pause and say that Eve is sort of our unsung hero, because she had to leave campus this year for health problems, and she's been working long distance as she recovers, but she'll be back soon. Colleen Patton, Melody Ross, and Sean Simpson. So thank you very much. The 60 or so volunteers who helped out. They sort of came in at the last minute, learned their jobs really quickly, and were able to help us produce this fantastic, smooth conference. So thanks to the student volunteers. Is that there were a few poster cases that were found downstairs, so they're just outside the door here. And finally, we want to recognize the members of the ICLDC organizing committee and also the advisory committee, who took the time to read all of the abstracts. And also, we'd like to thank Isle Interpreter, including Tamar and Jan, for all the work they did coordinating for us.
Just to remind you again, Recovering Voices is over in the Center for Korean Studies at 2 p.m. I believe there's lunch at 1:30. And please fill out your evaluation forms and hand them to Jim, or put them in that box, or hand them to a person in a yellow t-shirt so we can continue to improve. And please recycle your name tags so that we can use them next time.
Well, the plastic part, not the paper.
Okay. Mahalo nui noa. And we look forward to meeting together again in 2014.